There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right. Let's fire. If I'm going to deliver this story, Dalton, fire. We'll fire the. Okay. There we go. It's the best version of the Tiger Rag. The Hold That Tiger, for me, Louis Armstrong fan, and a lot of versions out there. But you'll figure this out in a second. So I just wanted, because Dalton keeps me up to date with this. Since I walked in here to start the first hour, he said, "Sean, are you watching this Tiger story?" And I said, "No." He said, "Listen, go look at this." So here's the update. First of all, I got to tell you, those of you that are already in on this story, the Tiger is still on the loose. Okay, a story from CBS News there in Knoxville says officials are searching for a tiger who was spotted in eastern Tennessee early on Thursday, the Knox County Sheriff's Office said. Knoxville Police Dispatch said there have been three reported sightings of an animal around 7 a.m. Thursday near Thorn Grove Pike in Knoxville. WVLT-TV reports crews were sent to the area to investigate. Now, was there TV crew reporting, or was it... Said overnight officials said they received multiple calls of possible sightings in the area around John Sevier Highway and the Thorn Grove Pike and Bales Lane. Zoo Knoxville officials said, I'm going to put it in Sullivanese here, they counted up their tigers and they got all their tigers. They don't know where this one came from. So at least a tiger on the loose there in Knoxville. A friend of mine sent me a picture today of somebody trying to lure an errant pot-bellied pig that had escaped in the neighborhood back into their home. They were using a bag of Fritos to get the pot-bellied pig to follow them back into the side of the gate in the backyard. Maybe use that pig to lure the tiger. Out of all the things you can see, you walk out the back door, full-size Bengal tiger. I just be uncomfortable. And no, already the text coming in. I don't think there's any connection to Tiger King on this, but we'll see. That tiger's still on the loose, and when we get an update on the tiger on the loose in Knoxville, we'll let you know more. And also, Dalton pointed out they're landing a plane on the interstate up there for some reason as well. I don't know what's going on out there. I am tempted to make my Tennessee football jokes, but I'm not. I'm going to behave myself, at least on that front. Hey, y'all say hello to my friend Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama, back on the airwaves here at FM Talk 106.5 starting tomorrow night. Hey, Robert.
Yes, yes. Good afternoon, Sean. We are really, really excited and thankful, quite frankly, in this world of COVID to be able to kick off your season 3. So that's going to start tomorrow night, and we're real excited about rocking and rolling.
Yeah, man, and it's good. Glad to have it back. So, you know, just more live local radio here on FM Talk 106.5 and a host that knows his way around the political scene, and one of us, a homer, and me, two tours with the Navy, and then make sure to come back home, and the perspectives are great. So, as always, break a leg tomorrow night.
Thank you so much. Really do appreciate it. We're going to have some fun topics here, particularly over the next 8 weeks. Can you believe the general election is right around the corner?
And let's say it is just around the corner. And are we looking at... Because a couple things I want to talk about with you. Are we looking at October surprises in September? And if we are they gaining traction? And we'll get to the Woodward piece in a second, but you and I had also talked about the story in The Atlantic and using unnamed sources and claiming that, to paraphrase here, that President Trump denigrated dead Marines.
Yeah, that one was actually particularly interesting to me. I know part of our ongoing conversation, at least over the past 2 years that you and I have had this professional aspect of our relationship, is organizations reporting what the facts are before we start to have our traditional left versus right debates on what the facts mean.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I was a little disappointed in the reporting because it required such a heavy reference to unnamed sources. Now, I think it's important to note that subsequent to the original reporting coming out, you had additional news outlets verify with the folks that they were able to confirm with that the Atlantic sourced information was correct, at least in terms of the people who told it to the Atlantic. So I don't think there's an issue of whether or not the people said what they said they said. The one thing that ends up being a little bit disheartening is we don't have the opportunity to interrogate those folks because they are not currently on the record.
Yeah,
and, so hopefully we can get a little better about that as we continue to go forward.
I think the only way to change that and is for consumers of news to demand it, the market to demand that.
And really, that ends up being reinforced by the notion of, you know, it's like if the reporting is something that your side likes, then all of a sudden you believe it. And if it's something that my side likes, then all of a sudden, you know, you're the worst person in the world. I think you hit the nail on the head that we, as the population that consumes that media, has to be a little bit more demanding in terms of what our standards are.
So we'll go from that and we'll transition into the Woodward story. And something that had been going on for quite some time, 9 months worth of interviews, I think, between Woodward and President Trump. Of course, so the audio coming out yesterday about wanting to play down the deadliness of the coronavirus by President Trump is obviously what has garnered the attention here and getting attention for the new book, Rage, which is supposed to be coming out, next week, I think. I gotta, Dalton, sure, can correct me when it's coming out soon. I've said earlier this today, if that would have happened 10 years ago, if it happened, presidents passed, I think this story would be bigger. But based on where we are now in 2020, I don't know that this moves a needle on who gets elected and who doesn't get elected.
Well, there are so many aspects to this story. We could literally spend an entire hour just talking about the mechanics of it. But there were a couple of things that really kind of stick out. And one I just have to kind of laugh about. It's like, who in the world on that staff thought it would be a good idea for President Trump, with his lack of messaging discipline, to talk to a reporter with a reputation like Bob over, 18 hours or something like that,
yeah,
and do it on tape?
Yeah.
It's like, that's the individual that, I'm not sure how many additional jobs that individual will find, because I think that was nuts.
But I was told, you know, on the same front, that with the Twitter messaging, when they tried to rein that in, staff members, mm-hmm, tried to rein that in, that and President Trump agreed to it. I think the anecdote goes, and there's a name with it, there's a named source that tells the story, that he agreed, sure, to it, and he said, okay, yeah, we'll do it this way, y'all can do it, and I'll look over the tweet before it's sent to make sure it's, you know, in my voice. And they no sooner finished the meeting than, like, a couple hours later, Twitter was wide open with the president doing it again. Like, he wasn't having it. So, you know, I wonder if anybody could have told him not to do this interview with Woodward. I agree with you.
No.
Yeah.
we know the answer to that question. I mean, and this is the one part of the Atlantic story that makes at least elements of him going to the gravesite plausible, albeit there's still some debate as to what he said. Because when do you know the president wanting to do something and not knowing what he wants to do?
Right.
Right. At the end of the day, he does exactly what he wants to do. So if he wanted to go, he would have gone. If he didn't want to go, he didn't want to go. But be that as it may, I think you teed up something interesting. When you tend to assess the political landscape at this point in the cycle, typically you're saying people are entrenched in their positions, right? So, mm-hmm, people are either for President Trump or they're against President Trump. They're for Vice President Biden or they're against Vice President Biden. And then there's a fairly small slither of the proverbial undecided, or the people who are capable of changing their mind. So generally speaking, yes, the aha moment that comes under the umbrella of the proverbial October surprise would have a tendency during a normal election cycle of pushing people in one direction or another. So I think the number of people who are actually impacted by this additional insight that comes from the Woodward book are actually going to be fairly limited. But the question becomes, as has been the case in our Robert and Sean conversation, are there enough of those people in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Florida to start to push it in the buying direction? And I actually believe that there are. And so I think this is going to end up hurting the president. But again, does it hurt him in the magnitude that it would have in previous administrations? Probably not. But it's slowly but surely chipping away those 77,000 incremental votes across those four states that actually led to him winning in 2016.
Now, and to look at this, I wonder, Robert, so you talk about the people maybe shifting their votes. Well, let me throw another part into that. Will it affect, because it's, you know, it's cliched as can be, but it's about turnout, right? It's about turnout, turnout, turnout. So if somebody, from the perspective of somebody who would vote against President Trump, would this be the thing? If you're like, I don't know if I'm going to show up and vote against President Trump. I don't like him. But now that this came out that he knew it was deadly and, you know, didn't blow the siren call because he didn't want to panic the American people, that's why I'm now going to go vote. Or on the flip side, if you're a supporter of President Trump and you're already galvanized, locked in, but, I talk about Trump, but I don't know if I'm going to vote or not. And then you see this and you go, well, I'm not going to go vote now. That's where I wonder if it affects turnout, some story like this.
So I actually think it's closer to the situation with Chief Justice Moore, where you had, and not the substance of what the issue was, but in terms of how the voting population responded. I think what it would end up being is a person who is a traditional Republican, either a fiscal or social conservative, that would have a tendency to vote Republican, that it's death by a thousand paper cuts, right? So it's just one more thing, and then one more thing, and then one more thing. So I think the challenge on the Republican side is that some people are going to decide not to go to the polls, right? And just say, look, I'm going to stay home. And so you run the risk of the numbers being depressed relative to 2016. And that's what I think will ultimately, in those battleground states, serve to Vice President Biden's advantage vis-a-vis President Trump.
Where do you think about, as things tighten, of course, and like we talked about last hour, with Congressman Burns saying he commented that things always, no matter what race it is, tighten after Labor Day. But so that tightens up in the race. But I just don't, I believe this thing is neck and neck going forward. But I would be wrong if I look at polls out there. But you point something out, too. The polls we should pay attention to shouldn't be national polls. It should be states, certain battleground states that are in play. And those margins seem further out than neck and neck to me as well.
Yeah, well, if we go all the way back to when we were setting up a criteria for how it is that we evaluate presidential debates, and we talked a lot about it being an expectations game and it being a driver for fundraising dollars, right? Mm-hmm. And so those large national polls, when it shows splits the way they are right now, of course that helps Vice President Biden in the space that we are in right now, particularly given where we were, call it pre-coronavirus, where, the economy was operating at such a high level for some portions of the population that it was a little bit harder for him to compete in that space than it is now. But be that as it may, we know that presidential elections are determined by the Electoral College. The Electoral College is related to electoral votes in those key states, the ones that were traditionally Democratic that switched to President Trump during the last election cycle, and I think one or two more that were traditional Republican that are in play this cycle. But I think it's the combination of those together in those locations ultimately what will determine the race. And they have a tendency to be a little bit closer than the national polls.
All right, we're coming right back. More with Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama, back on tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, right here at FM Talk 106.5. And more to talk about when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
By the way, just side note to a rant that I've had for a very long time, although the last few months it seems like a lot of people have come along with this rant. Fill out, and I'm gonna say it saucy here, fill out your damn census. I'm sorry, and this is a it's been a beef of mine, and what could happen here, lose a congressional seat, what it means to us here in Alabama, what it means to, and this is, and I, listen, I'll ask my friend Robert Kennedy in a second. To me, this is not a bipartisan, it's a nonpartisan thing, filling out the census, and we are the last in the country for percentage of census fill out when we have got to more than ever fill the census out, and on top of that, AL1 is the second worst in the state for filling out census. Call your friends, call your kinfolk, and tell them to fill out the dang census. You agree, Robert?
Oh, wholeheartedly. I mean, filling out the census might take you 5 minutes,
yep,
if that long. And regardless, you know, even though we have the debate on the left side and the right side of the aisle, it's better for us to have more representation in Congress than less.
Yep. There's never been a time that you said, you know what we need is less of a voice in Washington.
Exactly.
We never have. All right, speaking of that voice in Washington, too, in AL1, talking to Congressman Byrne last hour, and one of the things I want to bounce off you is what he was saying about, you know, if Vice President Biden is elected president, and that he would bail out these states and these municipalities that have poorly managed their state and cities.
Okay.
Your take on that?
Yeah, well, so first of all, my friend Representative Byrne has a very good way of communicating that, creates the impression that he's communicating objective truth, right? The one area where I think a further explanation is needed is when we talk about the state of Alabama and the fact that we're going to operate in the black. And part of the reason why we're going to do that is we are a net receiver of federal dollars.
True.
And so when you look at these states that were being identified, and we take New York or California as an example, they are a net provider of dollars to the federal government. So going back to what he was saying about his take is, I believe that regardless of who is elected, whether it ends up being Vice President Biden or whether it ends up being President Trump, ultimately the Congress and the president are going to do what they need to do in order to keep these cities whole. And that's because at the end of the day, if you talk about wanting to be supportive of basic municipal functions, right? Police, fire, public works, you're not going to allow a city to decrease to the level that their citizens aren't going to be saving. You're just not going to do it. So I think, yes, is it going to be to the advantage of those cities if you end up having a Democrat in the Oval Office as opposed to a Republican? Sure. I mean, I don't think anybody would be willing to argue that. But there's no set of circumstances in which a Republican administration is going to allow the cities to collapse. It's just not going to happen.
You know, the problem is the temptation that was there, and you know, we saw a lot of it in 07, 08 with the financial collapse. It showed, you know, the worn seams of this, that you have politicians making promises that I would point out to. This is both parties have done this around the country, different states, different parties, but promising these legacies because it was a popular thing to do. I mean, they didn't have to cut the check for it, and it was popular to do, and it got them support.
Yeah, we could say the same thing about legacy expenses when we get into the issue of private prisons in the state of Alabama.
Sure,
albeit
absolutely.
That'll be a conversation for another day. But I think the important thing, and this is really what I want the audience to appreciate and why it is I like the fact that we ping-pong on some of these issues, was, you know, at the end of the day, nobody is going to allow somebody else to collapse, right? There may be some pain. There may be some accountability. But even the stuff that President Trump is talking about now about, quote, defunding, end quote, of cities where the mayors aren't doing a good job as it pertains to their response to some of the recent upticks in violence, at the end of the day, he's not going to do it. I mean, that's more bluster than it is anything that's something.
One thing for last hour, and I hate it because we have less than a minute here, but, you know, I just had I didn't think a political question, just the mechanics of running government, where that benefits you in sales tax revenue, lodging tax revenue, and property taxes, you know, that you need to run the government. I mean,
sure. And if you're talking about the crossing the bar so that in Representative Byrne's scenario, he wouldn't visit New York City because he doesn't feel safe.
Right.
That's one thing, right? Obviously something crossing that bar. But even when you talk about the issues that are happening right now, the stuff that's really making people feel a little uncomfortable, there are things that are happening at night. They're fairly well isolated geographically within cities. It's not like it's happening across the board. right? So I think at least here in the short term, I don't think we've crossed that mark.
There you go. All right. Tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, Kennedy for Alabama. Folks want to find you online. Where'd they go?
Yes, you can go Kennedy4Alabama.org. And tune in tomorrow night. We're going to have Dr. J.T. Aberhart, who is the Democratic nominee for Alabama's 1st Congressional District.
All right,
and my older brother, Jeff Kennedy, who's an assistant fire chief in Austin, Texas, honoring September 11th. So,
all right.
Tune in.
Fantastic. Thanks, Robert.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
.35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Phone number 343-0106. 343-0106. This segment of the show brought to you by Harry's. Great to have Harry's on board and part of the show again. And they just came out with their sharpest blades ever. And unlike some other razor companies, they're not charging you more for their product improvements. That number's still at $2, y'all. Harry's new sharper blades still as low as $2 each. And I've told you over the years, I love the shave with Harry's. I love the convenience of having the blades show up at my house. And I most love the price at $2 each. And right now, you can find those Harry's blades, the new sharper blades, at your big box stores, drug stores, grocery stores near you. But if you like to shop online, you can get a trial set for just $3 if you go online to harrys.com and use my code, my new code, Sean S. So it was always Sean for all those years, S-E-A-N. Now they've made it one letter more, Sean S. So when you go to checkout at harrys.com, make sure to use my code, Sean S. And it is the same quality, even more now, with the sharper blades that has made Harry such a big part of so many people's lives out there. And y'all, the convenience, the price, and the dang good shave. Check it out. And if you don't like it, 100% quality guarantee at Harry's, over at harrys.com. All right, so here it is. You can get the sharpest blades yet from Harry's. You can get Harry's sharpest blades ever at the big box store, drugstore, grocery store near you. Just head on over to the grooming aisle. But if you like to shop online, and let me add, support the show, Harry's has a great offer for listeners. New customers, y'all get $5 off a Harry's trial set when you use my code Sean S at harrys.com. That means you get the 5-blade razor, the weighted handle, feels so great in your hand, the foaming shave gel, travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Now, you got to use my code, so don't forget to use code Sean S at checkout and give Harry's sharper blades a try. All right, check them out. A couple things I want to roll through here. First of all, read some text here, and if, let's see here, the new ones, plenty of new ones coming in. A couple picked out here. Let's see. This one going back to the Atlantic article. Steve said, just look at what Trump said about John McCain when Trump was running for president. You know, that was one of the many things that bothered me, Steve. That bothered me. But I'm talking about what moves a political needle these days. I mean, if you believe the Atlantic story, which, you know, to have John Bolton, as Dalton so deftly pointed out the morning, you know, John Bolton, who is, I think has an active lawsuit both ways between him and the president and him, for John Bolton to come out and say, I didn't hear the president say that. There's somebody who would have an axe to grind with the president who didn't say it. It just seems, here's the problem, though. The problem is, when you have, like Steve's referencing the President Trump, you know, when we talked about John McCain and getting captured and all that, then you set a formula where somebody can accuse you of something, they can stylistically change it, but going forward, let's say it's not true, and make this comment that President Trump denigrated the dead Marines, then some people, like Steve, maybe here, will believe it because President Trump's done it to himself. He set it up where there's some precursor here that somebody can use to say, well, I think he said it. But once again, if you did or didn't, do you think this changes what happens on November 3rd? If you say that, does that make you all of a sudden change what you think is right for the country and vote for Joe Biden? Eric says, I'm proud of how presidents, quote, am proud of how the president, quote, downplayed the virus. I think it falls within his duties to do so. This is interesting from Eric. He said, I mean, hell, we couldn't even keep toilet paper on the shelf. What would we have done as a society if he would have been presented this as worst case scenario? To me, it would have been irresponsible on his part because it would 100% would have caused a mass panic situation. So where would that have left us? Very interesting from Eric. Now, if I sit in my, you know, idealistic seat here, Eric, if I fold out the folding chair, you and I, and I'm going to sit in the idealistic chair, I'm bothered because I my tolerance for being lied to by government is small, even though that's been worn out over the years, right? But pragmatically, what you're saying is interesting. You make a good pragmatic argument. I think you're thinking, and good for you, you're thinking into it deeply where it, what the president is saying to Woodward there is just people are going to react one way or another, but I still don't think it changes. Just like I was talking about Steve's text, I don't think it moves the needle here. I don't think it changes what happens in November. But Eric's comment is very interesting from a pragmatic angle, right? Because, I mean, people are obsessed, though, Eric, with people saying, the government is lying to us. It's all a conspiracy. So people could use that and say, look, here's more of that. The president knew the situation. Although Fauci, who has, you know, been denigrated by President Trump, pretty much if you're not on staff right now, you know, or even if you are, you have a pretty good chance of getting denigrated by President Trump. But Fauci came out and said, listen, what President said is what went on in our meetings, our private meetings, and when he went out and talked about it, he lived up to it. But to Eric's point here, if y'all hear that, what do you think about that? Think about it as you're in the position of run the country. You're in the Oval Office. Do you downplay things for the benefit of preventing mass chaos, mass panic? Appreciate that text. All right, so Pete says here, the tax revenues are the key to deciphering the impacts in Portland, Kenosha, etc. They're not tainted by 24-hour news opinions and typically discussed, or at least in the agenda packet and parentheses for city council meetings. Politicians can frame it however they want, but the budget shifting belies the current reality of their stance on protesting or rioting. So, Pete, do you agree or not? You think it's not affecting their tax revenues? It's got to going forward. And what Pete's texting about is what I mentioned earlier. If you kind of even just take the politics out of, which is hard to do when you look at Mayor speaking in Portland with his ridiculousness, but you look at Portland, you look at Minneapolis, right? Look at so many other cities out there, Atlanta. I mean, go down the list of them. Where's the benefit, the political benefit? That's what I'm talking. You know, everybody always talks about follow the money. Okay, follow the money is fine. This is a way of following the money. Where's the political benefit? Because with some exception, but in most cases, a politician, elected official, is working at their job, and they're also working on making sure they stay in office, that they win the next election. So if you're a mayor there and you're not supporting law enforcement, it just seems to me it's like the dumbest thing ever. Because if you do that, you lose the tax revenue that comes in that lets you do projects, ribbon cutting, serve the community, do all these things that get you reelected. It just seems very counterproductive to those people retaining office and whatever. And I, once again, the politics of it, you got Democrat mayors in these cities, you've got this going on. Democrat cities are where these protests that have gone on have turned into riots. Maybe there's some exception out there that I haven't seen, a Republican mayor, even though, like here, you don't declare your party for mayor, but, you know, where a Republican mayor has run a city that the protests turned into riots. But all the ones I can think of right now are cities that have a mayor that's a Democrat. But that Democrat mayor wants to stay elected, wants to stay in office. And if you let this go there, when people leave the city and move out of the city or move to a completely different city or a different state, they take their businesses with them. People don't travel there, so you don't get lodging tax and all that. Eventually, you're not going to get reelected because you're not going to have the money coming in the tax coffers to do the things you're supposed to do. Picking up trash, repaving streets, all those. It boils down to that. So this one here, Tim says, I think the government, right on down to the mayors and everyone else, knew what this thing was going to do in a city, like in the city of Mobile. They chose to have Mardi Gras, which they knew was a bad idea in regards to the virus spreading. They had to make a decision that was based on the economy. So, Tim, do you think, this is a question that's come up before, do you think that they had knowledge at a local level, let's take it here to Mobile, like you do, that this was at the level that we now know it has become, and they had Mardi Gras in spite of it? I haven't seen it. Tim, you need to send me the information to prove that to me, because I don't think they did. Now, what's going to happen Mardi Gras next year is interesting, and of course that discussion that Dan and Dalton had with Rob Hulbert this morning from Lanyap, and the limitation coming to the Civic Center for Mardi Gras balls, they're going to talk about that more with Mary Lee Gay coming up tomorrow on the morning show, but that's a big one there. All right, we'll go to the phones here for a second, but a ton of texts coming in. Let's see. Let's go to Robert in Pensacola. Interstate call. Hey, Robert.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good.
I think the reason these mayors are doing this is they want to make citizens' lives miserable and some way try to blame it on Trump.
But would you take that fall? Like, if you're Robert, if you're a mayor somewhere, and you could just hate Trump, you hate Trump big time, but you're somebody that's run for office and obviously have aspirations of staying in that office, do you take a hit at a city level to try to keep Trump from getting elected when that means you won't get reelected in Anywhereville, USA, you know, when election time comes up?
Well, they may not get elected. Those liberals think entirely different than you do. They don't think the same way. And do you ever hear them say anything about blacks killing blacks? The leading cause of death in a young black male is murder,
right?
By one of his own race.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this before on the show. I think what the reaction is, and I agree with you that needs to be part of the discussion, but I think what the reaction of the protests have been is it's coming from a point of authority, you know, in law enforcement. And then I think the danger is assuming that every time somebody in law enforcement has to kill somebody of color, that it's wrong. You know, that's the problem. It's not getting the facts. It's jumping to the conclusion that must have been bad because, you know, the officer was white or the officer was black and killed somebody that was black. I think it's the badge.
I've got one thing to say about that. If every one of them were obeying the police and obeying the law, none of them would have gotten hurt. Every one of them were disobeying the law. And that's the reason they were shot.
No, unless you're sitting in your apartment minding your own business and they come into the wrong apartment and shoot you.
Well, now that woman, you know, I don't know what was wrong with her. But
she was in her, I mean... You think she was at?
Yeah.
You think she was
the race thing?
Right. So I mean, I'm just trying to get an answer on that.
Yeah, I don't think it was a race thing when that woman shot that black. I think she was confused, either on medication or alcohol. But who knows?
But you think it's okay in every case? You think of the situation. Let's what has started all this, because here's the problem. I think there was a great discussion that could have been had about reform and making police better, and I want to fund police more to make them better to do their job. But if you look at Minneapolis, you think,
I don't think you can pay a policeman enough for the work he does. It's too dangerous, and you know they don't. You obviously don't go into police work to make money. It's a dangerous occupation, and yes, more training, more money.
I mean, the death of George Floyd, you think Chauvin was in the right there, that it was because George Floyd wasn't complying? Do you think that equaled one action equaled the others?
One case.
It is one case. That's why I picked that case.
Mill.
Yeah, I'm not saying every case. Lord knows, Robert, I'm a guy that points out that there's a lot of people making assumptions that any time law enforcement shoots somebody of color, then it was done for reasons of bigotry or racism. I agree with you on that, that's happening too much. But then to say in every case, if the person would have been, you know, acting right or whatever term you use, that they wouldn't have been killed, you can't kneel on somebody's neck like that. You know better.
Well, I know that. I don't, but I'm not a, you know, George, Floyd had a tremendous amount of fentanyl in his system. And
so you can still kneel on it. I mean, what if somebody had a bunch of fentanyl in their system and I T-boned them in my truck with a big brush guard on it and killed them? Does it make I'm right? Am I right because they had fentanyl in their system?
Well, now, wait a minute. If they were running a red light and driving erratically...
No, they're not driving. They're a passenger. They're a passenger in that car.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Now, I'm not defending the policeman that... That was really repugnant.
Okay, and that's all I want to get to. That case, that we can agree. And at the same time, I agree with you that people make an assumption about law. If there's a shooting, they're already making the assumption. If it's a person of color, then they must have been, you know, in no way responsible for what happened. And it's all on the police. So I agree with you on that. So I just say the world is great.
I got one other thing.
Okay.
They are a tremendous number of whites that are killed by white policemen. A lot, lot more than blacks. So
yeah, well, there's more white people. Yeah, well,
that's true.
We need to do better, and that's where I go with. I appreciate your call. You and I might not line up on all parts of this, but I appreciate your opinion, and it gives me a chance to talk about mine and let y'all do the same thing at 343-0106. If everything has to go into this bin or that bin, we're no better than kindergartners here, y'all. This tribalism, my side, your side, it's always this way, it's always the other way. It can't be in between. You gotta grow up.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, looking down at the bunch of text messages, which we love, coming in, and some folks asking also about the announcement of that reduced capacity, possibly for Mardi Gras balls for 2021. Tomorrow, 8 a.m., put that on your reminder list. Tomorrow, 8 a.m., you've got Mary Lee Gay is going to be joining Dan and Dalton to talk about that, and she's running things down there. The way I see it, she's running things down there, and she can answer the questions that you have. All right, to the phones at 343-0106, and let's go to Damon in Mobile first. Hey, Damon.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to quickly touch base with you on something you mentioned about tribalism and how we need to get away from that. I was watching CNN about a month or two ago, and they ran a documentary about Goldwater, and they said that Lyndon Johnson spied on the Goldwater campaign using CIA agents. And the secretary for the Goldwater campaign was a CIA agent. And it floored me because I was raised in Texas. I'm born in Mobile, but Democrat, LBJ was considered right under Abraham Lincoln as far as blacks go. But when I watched that, I almost fell on the floor. And I said to myself, that's probably why Nixon did what he did, spying on Democrats, and it just kind of sets everything in motion as far as one doing one thing and the other one following up with something else, and we need to get away from it.
It does, and that idea that it makes it okay because somebody else did it. But here's the problem. So, Damon, I'll say that to people and say, listen, you have to do better. They'll say, well, it doesn't matter because you won't get elected. Unless you play ball like that, you're not going to get elected, and you'll make no change, so you'll sit there by yourself on your high horse.
Correct. And another thing I learned during that documentary, they said Kennedy and Goldwater were such close friends. They both were in Congress together. They both were in the war together. And they would sit for hours and talk about everything other than politics. They talk about a little politics, but they were on different sides of the aisle philosophically, but they could sit down for 2 or 3 hours and talk about fishing or whatever else, sports, and drink brandy. And they were the best of friends.
It's a good thing. Sounds like the old Reagan and Tip O'Neill stuff, too. But
absolutely.
I don't know if we can
get back to that.
I would hope, Damon. I appreciate your call. Thank you. Lisa line open, although we're right up against the end of the hour. Let me see. James and Daphne's up next. Hey, James. James, you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here, Sean. How are you today?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for calling. So what's your take here?
Well, I was listening to your last caller with the police thing, and I know not all cops are bad, but not all cops are good. But I was thinking that the best thing I think we could do is to create maybe a national registry to, yep. So when policemen get fired for being, you know, using excessive force and stuff, they can't go to some little small town and get on as a cop again and keep doing this stuff. They can look him up and say, oh, well, he's had so many excessive force complaints that have been proven true, we don't need to hire this guy.
And you know who supports that is, like, most of the folks in law enforcement, I think, well, everybody I've asked in law enforcement, they support that. They're for that. So I don't know why it should be so hard to get done.
I don't know why either, but that, to me, seems like the best thing. So that way we can keep these bad cops from getting other jobs and everybody's safer.
Yep. You know who dislikes bad cops the most? Good cops. All right. Paul Feinbaum's got a couple things to talk about. He's going to take over in just a minute here. Tomorrow morning, Mobile Mornings. And, oh, by the way, like we said earlier, Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama, back on Friday nights at 6. So we're going to have to change all the graphics now. 53 hours a week of live local programming coming out of this here studio at Airport and 65. Y'all have a great one. We'll talk tomorrow.